From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! The protests and violence continue for a third day in Cincinnati over the police killing of a 19-year-old black man. Los Angeles may see its first Latino mayor in 130 years. Maxam Corporation hits protesters with a slap suit, and the FBI steps up raids and surveillance on some of its most wanted organizations, the Earth and Animal Liberation Fronts. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Unrest spread to other areas of Cincinnati last night in protests that have continued for a third straight night following the fatal shooting of Timothy Thomas, a 19-year-old African-American man, as he fled a white police officer trying to arrest him for failing to appear for misdemeanor charges and traffic violations, including failure to wear a seatbelt. The officer who shot Thomas has been placed on paid administrative leave. Earlier yesterday, clergy working to restore calm warned city officials that African-American residents have legitimate fears that must be addressed. In a city where 15 black men have died at the hands of police since 1995, including four since November, the issue is getting the police under control, said Canon Vicar Kwasi Hornell, an Episcopal clergyman at Christ Church Cathedral. The shooting of Thomas is only part of the anger in the community, said black businessman Steve Reese. Reese said that African Americans, who account for 43% of Cincinnati's population after years of white flight to distant suburbs, feel economically left behind as millions of dollars are pumped into upscale riverfront and downtown construction. Mayor Charles Lucan said the city may request National Guard assistance if the unrest continues. Pastor Damon Lynch talks about what sparked the protests of the last 3 days, what he understands about the killing of Timothy Thomas.
Early reports are that the young man was wanted for a number of traffic tickets that had turned into capiuses or bench warrants in some areas. And he was running from the police, and police cornered him in an alley, and the officer that that confronted him, early indications are that he thought that he had something when he reached in his waistband, and the officer feared for his life and shot the young man. We've seen and heard that tale over and over again. All officers need say is that they were in fear of their life, and it seems that that gives them justification to take a life without consequence.
Pastor Damon Lynch of the First Baptist Church of Cincinnati, Ohio, in the community over the Rhine, where a lot of the protests are taking place. Former Assembly Speaker Antonio Villaraigosa and City Attorney James Hahn forged the front of the pack for mayor of Los Angeles Tuesday and headed for a June 5th runoff election. The race will be a showdown between Villaraigosa, a progressive who could become the city's first Latino mayor in nearly 130 years, and Hahn, a five-term City Hall incumbent who is the standard-bearer of one of the region's best-known political families. According to the Los Angeles Times exit poll, support for Hahn, who won 25% of the primary votes, was strongest among older voters and African Americans. Hahn wasted no time staking his claim to the ideological right of Villaraigosa, questioning why the former assembly member had failed to support legislation intended to toughen penalties against gang-related street crime. Villaraigosa, a one-time street tough from the east side neighborhood of City Terrace, who took 30% of the primary vote, built a powerful new coalition of Latinos, liberals, Jews, and west side residents, but his most coordinated support came from unions. Los Angeles has the fastest growing union membership in the country. We're joined right now by Maria Elena Durazo, who is head of the Hotel and Restaurant Workers Union. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you, Amy. Good morning.
It's good to have you with us. Can you explain the significance of this vote and the breakdown of who's voted for these two leading candidates?
Well, I think it's absolutely very telling that Antonio, who is our candidate, won so well across the board throughout Los Angeles that he cuts across, even whether it's age, gender, race, on all these issues, union, non-union membership, because Antonio really is talking about the issues that people care. And when you think about it, and that's exactly what the labor movement represents, it really doesn't matter what color you are. We're all facing the same issues. It just takes somebody to reach out and talk to people across the board about those same issues, whether it's education or the types of jobs that they're working at, the security or lack of security of those jobs, health care. Those are the things that people care about. And obviously Antonio has proven that a candidate can do that and win, and not think that you can only get a certain part of town or a certain group of people to support you. You're safe when you talk about the real issues that workers and their families face every single day.
Karen Bass also joins us on the line, an African-American activist with the Community Coalition. What is your assessment of the breakdown of the Latino versus Black vote in Los Angeles?
Well, first of all, the coalition you described, I would include African-Americans in that coalition. When you mentioned union members, you must remember that African-Americans do belong to unions, and especially the unions that were organized in support of Antonio, many of them are unions from the public sector, which employs a significant number of African-Americans. I think one of the key things happening in the African-American community with the other candidate, James Hahn, is really the legacy of his father. And James Hahn's father was a beloved politician who died several years ago. And it was fascinating in talking to African-American voters how people held on to his legacy and voted for his son, primarily for his legacy, as opposed to the fact that his son actually has been a public official for over 20 years. But what people recalled was not his record, but the record of his father.
We're talking to Karen Bass and Maria Elena Durazo, who are both well-known activists in Los Angeles, talking about the vote that will now mean 6 weeks of intense political organizing. Maria Elena Durazo, what do you expect to see right now in this period before the runoff?
Well, I think you can already see. You mentioned the issue of how the what would be Antonio's attitude towards injunctions on gang violence and the sorts of things. You can already see that I think Hahn thinks he has to win over some of the Soboroff or Wax votes, some of the more conservative elements. And in order to do that, he's going to have to come across more conservative. And that means that he's going to have to paint Antonio as being too liberal. And I think that I don't know that he's going to get the kind of support that he needs as he tries to paint, as he paints himself, I guess for what he really is more conservative than Antonio. I think that presents a challenge for those votes that might have gone with, like Becerra, and even some of the ones for Wax. I don't think they want to be associated with a more conservative candidate in this city when you consider the issues of the growth of poverty and the growth of poverty-level jobs, the growth of no access to health care. Why would you want to be associated with and support a more conservative candidate?
I want to thank you both very much for being with us, Karen Bass with the Community Coalition and Maria Elena Durazo, head of the Hotel and Restaurant Workers Union. In terms of races, Maria Elena Durazo, how do you compare this race with union involvement?
Oh, well, you know, this was quite a challenge for workers and unions across the city. We have never been involved on a citywide level of trying to coordinate reaching out to union members. We've never done it, and I think it was it says a lot about the potential of reaching out to workers and their families We've shown that when we reach out to workers and their families, that we can cut across through the race and issues. And I think that it's very exciting. It matches, in a sense, I think it surpassed what the potential is to elect candidates that are the right candidates and what Los Angeles needs. So I'm very excited, and we work very closely with Karen and with so many other community organizations that really do think out of the box, that break out and say, you know, we've got to work together and stop being divided in this city. And we finally have a candidate who truly believes in that, and we're just going to work so much harder. We know it's going to be very difficult, but we're going to work so much harder to make sure that Antonio wins this. And it would be great in this country to have a mayor of the second largest city for that to be Antonio, in light of having a president like Bush.
Well, thank you again, Maria Elena Durazo, head of the Hotel and Restaurant Workers Union, and Karen Bass of the Community Coalition. You're listening to Democracy Now!
I don't want to know about evil. I only want to know about love. I don't want to know about evil. I only want to know about love. Sometimes it gets kind of hard to listen. Hard for me to use my eyes. And all around the gold is glistening. Make it show it keeps me down inside.
I Don't Want to Know by Dr. John here on Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Maxam Corporation owns some of the most intact ancient Douglas fir forests in the Northwest, and for the last 150 days, activists have been occupying an area there, and yesterday were hit with a slap suit by Charles Hurwitz's corporation. We're joined on the phone right now by Alicia Littletree, who is an Earth First activist. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thanks for having me.
Can you explain the significance of this, and for people around the country who may not be that familiar with Maxam and Charles Hurwitz, explain who they are as well?
Sure. Well, Maxam Corporation is a Texas-based corporation that owns subsidiaries, and one of the subsidiaries is Pacific Lumber Company. Now, Pacific Lumber, for many, many years, was a locally owned timber corporation or company in rural Northern California in Humboldt County, until Maxam did a junk bond takeover of the locally owned company and then started running PL to maximize profits. And most notably, in the 90s, they tripled the rate of cut of ancient redwood forest. Well, now they've pretty much liquidated what they can of their redwood holdings, and they're going for the Douglas fir forests, also an ancient forest ecosystem. And there's an area called the Mattole Watershed. It's the Mattole River in the ancient Douglas fir forests along the river. It's about 3,000 acres, and Pacific Lumber Maxam has been filing timber harvest plan after timber harvest plan aimed at liquidating this area. Well, the Mattole is also a place where a lot of people live, like back to the landers and rural people have land out there and have been working for many, many years to do restoration work just to repair previous logging that has happened. So when these logging plans started to come down the pike, community members and activists actually took to the woods and occupied the land. They've been doing a nonviolent occupation out there since November. It's been about 150 days, and just last weekend, the Humboldt County Sheriffs, along with PL volunteers, Pacific Lumber Company employees who volunteered to help, actually raided what we're calling the Mattole Free State, and, you know, it broke down the barricades and bulldozed people out of there, and there were three arrests. Well, as the arrestees were getting out of jail, they were served with court papers. On Friday, Maxam Pacific Lumber filed a slap suit against North Coast Earth First, Mattole Forest Defenders, 12 named individuals, and John and Jane Doe's 3 through 200. And the lawsuit is for civil conspiracy and for monetary damages.
We're talking to Alicia Littletree, Earth First activist, talking about the Maxam suit against the protesters. What will protesters do now?
Well, of course, the SLAP suit, SLAP is an acronym for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. This is obviously a move by Pacific Lumber to intimidate people out of protesting. In fact, a quote from the company yesterday talking to the local press was that John and Jane Doe's 3 through 200 is reserved for people, anyone who so much as donates a chocolate bar to the protest is going to have their name added to this list of people who are being sued. So obviously this is intimidation. But, you know, one of the things that's happened, a kind of a strange irony of our movement in the last 15 years in the forests of Northern California, is that we're a nonviolent direct action movement, and we have suffered so many civil rights abuses by law enforcement and by Pacific Lumber Maxam that we've actually started to get kind of like a legal education. You know, some of us are even law students and paralegals and have become lawyers. So we understand how the court system works a little bit, and we understand the process of discovery, which means that we can get documents from Maxam Pacific Lumber that show that they are actually a criminal enterprise and not us. So we're kind of looking forward to that whole process of, you know, making the company turn over their documents to us. But also, we're absolutely not planning on backing down. The Mattole watershed and the ancient Douglas fir forests are very precious, and no little lawsuit is going to stop us from being out there and defending them.
Last week, the FBI and the Oregon State Police raided the home and business of Craig Rosebrow, who is the press spokesperson for the North American Earth Liberation Front, known as ELF. In addition, Rosebrow was served a subpoena to testify before a federal grand jury on April 18th. The jury is investigating a fire which destroyed over 30 new sports utility vehicles at a car dealership in Eugene, Oregon, 2 weeks ago. The Earth Liberation Front announced its formation in Britain in the early 1990s in a breakaway split from the radical movement Earth First by members who wanted to see more direct action. ELF has been relatively quiet in Britain, but it leapt to U.S. public attention 2 years ago when a massive fire at the Vail Mountain Ski Resort did $12 million worth of damage, destroying four ski lifts and a restaurant. ELF blamed a proposed expansion into lynx habitat. Since then, ELF claimed credit for the release of 5,000 mink, a $500,000 arson of a timber industry headquarters, and an arson attack on a university GM research office. In January, the engaged in a series of arsons in a luxury housing development in Long Island. As the group has risen to fame, it's also risen to the top of the FBI's most wanted list. But members are not easy to find. Mirroring the organization of the old underground African liberation movements, the group is decentralized into local cells across the country. Members in one cell don't know members of another cell. So when the FBI made its first bust several weeks ago, arresting four New York teenagers in conjunction with the Long Island arsons, it was no closer to ELF activists in the rest of the country. Today, we're joined by a number of people to talk about the tactics and philosophy of the ELF and the Animal Liberation Front. Again, groups that are targeted by the FBI and, in Canada, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. We're going to break for stations to identify themselves, and then we hope to be joined by various people around the country. Alicia Littletree will also stay with us, an Earth First organizer from Northern California. Earth First, not to be confused with the Animal and Earth Liberation Fronts. You're listening to Democracy Now! Back in a minute. You're listening to Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers, as we go now to Canada, where we're joined by David Barbarash. He is a media spokesperson for the Animal Liberation Front, joining us from Canada. You've been under intensive surveillance over the last years. Can you describe what's happening?
Well, we'd need probably a whole program, but basically it began in the summer of 1995 when myself and one other person were put on under intense surveillance for a series of pipe bombs that were sent through the mail, claimed by an anti-fascist organization in Canada. We were under surveillance for intensive surveillance for at least 3 years while we were being investigated for those offenses, as well as sending razor blades through the mail claimed by an animal rights group called the Justice Department. And both myself and my associate, Darren Thurston, are nonviolent activists. And we belong to the ALF at one point and maintain our philosophy of not harming any humans or animals in the course of our actions. And the RCMP know this and have stated as much to us that they understand our philosophy, but yet they still chose to believe we were the prime suspects in these violent activities and placed us under intense surveillance. The surveillance included massive physical surveillance, up to 8 or 10 members of the RCMP watching us on the ground with cars, bikes, on buses, in cafes, banks, wherever we went, including we were also under surveillance by the security establishment known as CSIS, Canadian Security Intelligence Service, which is not a law enforcement agency. They're an intelligence gathering service. They're basically the spies of Canada. Both of these agencies had at least a half a dozen members of us on us for several years, including the physical surveillance. There was also house bugs were placed, phone bugs, bugs were placed in hotel rooms. They went around, interviewed people that we knew to try to get information on us. And, of course, the most abhorrent thing they did was they employed undercover operatives. This is the RCMP, five of them, and tried to infiltrate the groups that I was working with and tried to get me to set up, tried to get me to burn down a building under the guise of some kind of animal liberation action. I didn't take their bait, and eventually the people went away. We were eventually charged with the razor blade crimes and began several years of a legal process. We managed to get a number of files, thousands of files, actually, through disclosure. As Alicia just mentioned, disclosure is one of the greatest tools we have in our defense. In this disclosure, we found a lot of evidence about their undercover operation, which was kind of critical to the case because the RCMP had testified at our preliminary hearing in court under oath that, in fact, no undercover operatives were used against us, and they'd said this a number of times, and it was reiterated by the Crown Prosecutor in our case. And in poring over these disclosure documents, we did find evidence of the undercover operation, including the actual names of the officers who were the operatives involved. And the judge in our case, we had a number of disclosure hearings, and the judge in our case ordered disclosed a number of documents, including the key ones about this undercover operation, which they had blacked out, basically all the key areas except for a few that I mentioned. The judge ordered these paragraphs disclosed to us, a couple of months later, the Crown dropped all the charges. Basically, they would have been caught with their pants down in a bold-faced lie under oath in court.
I wanted to bring Derek Jensen into the conversation. You've been listening to David Barbarash, who's a media spokesperson for the Animal Liberation Front. He's based in British Columbia. Derek Jensen is the author of a book called A Language Older Than Words, speaking to us from Northern California. You've been very much looked to by those of the animal and earth liberation fronts as a kind of philosopher that supports the kind of actions that they take. Can you talk about your philosophy?
Well, actually, I'm very honored that they would look to me that way. I guess part of my philosophy as it would concern this is one of the things that I've written in language was that every morning when I wake up, I ask myself whether I should write or blow up a dam. And what that gets to, or what I'm trying to get at with that line, is the question of whether I think that discourse really works within our society. It's pretty clear that, I mean, I've worked on salmon issues in the Pacific Northwest for a dozen years, and in the inland Northwest, at least, it's pretty clear that even though, you know, we've been working on these issues for many years, it's not a lack of activism or a lack of words that's killing salmon. It's dams. It's the presence of dams. And anybody who lives in the Northwest knows that, knows what's going to happen, which is that politicians and business people are going to continue to lie and delay, and scientists are going to continue to study, and activists are going to continue to do our work, and writers are going to continue to write, and the salmon are going to continue to die. And it's a cozy relationship for all of us but the salmon. And so it asks the question, or one of the questions I want to ask is with my work, is whether I really want to be a member of sort of the loyal opposition, or whether I really want to start accomplishing something, whatever that means. And one of the things that's become pretty clear to me that we need to begin asking ourselves is whether we believe that, that the government, sort of the corporate theocracy is what I've taken to calling it lately, that runs everything. I think we really need to start looking at it as a government of occupation, because it's pretty clearly not a government of inhabitation, because if it were, you know, it's one of the things that amazes me is that people buy bottled water. This kills me, because if we're not going to rebel at having to pay for water, what are we going to rebel at? It's an extraordinary sort of insult. You know, if there were somebody who came, if there were aliens who landed on this planet and changed the climate and systematically dismantled the ecological infrastructure and killed many of us. I mean, there's 450,000 Americans die of cancer every year, 300,000 of which at least are preventable. That's more Americans die of cancer, preventable cancer, every couple of weeks than are murdered every year. And if these aliens were to land here, I mean, there would be, you know, we would do something to stop them. But because it's our quote own government, we go along. We have these huge blind spots that we simply can't see all these various forms of violence that are done to us, and so we just, you know, sort of put down our heads and get through the day.
Well, what about the philosophy of Animal Liberation Front, Earth Liberation Front, that you have to confront the violence with? I don't know if you call it violence or property destruction, but is that the answer?
I don't think that there is any answer as such, because I mean, if it were that simple that there was an answer or even a several answers, you know, people would have found the golden key a long time ago and shut the stuff down. The problem is actually, I think, much deeper. And for me, the question also becomes, do you think that this culture is going to undergo a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living? And every activist that I know doesn't believe that's the case. And every activist I know is pretty much just holding on by our fingernails, hoping that, you know, grizzly bears or salmon or whatever stay alive until, and doing everything we can to make sure this happens, until industrial civilization comes to its inevitable end, which is, you know, to shut down. And so if you recognize that we're probably not going to undergo a voluntary transformation, I would think that that would change your tactics. And I don't yet know how that would change our tactics, because we don't talk about it. And so that's where I do still believe in some level of discourse. I really do believe in discourse deeply, and that's why I write, is let's start discussing these issues. Let's put them on the table. Let's put the issue of property destruction on the table. Let's put the issue of violence on the table. Let's put the issue of will civilization last on the table? And let's just start talking about this stuff honestly. And yeah, I do make a big distinction between violence and property destruction. I do think it's important that if we are going to resist, that we not work only according to the rules that are set up by the rulers. You know, it's like you say about the being the exception to the rulers. I think that you know, if you play according to the rules that are set up by those in power, you're going to lose every time. I mean, all we need to do for that is sort of look at the trail of broken treaties. I mean, I know every Indian that I've ever talked to, you know, that's their people have been lied to and murdered for 500 years. And it's the same, except for the murdered, it's the same with the lied to. For every environmental activist I know, every time we win a point in negotiation, they change the rules on us. And this happens with salvage rider. It happens with everything. And so, you know, how many times, you know, it's the old line about insanity being defined as, you know, attempting the same thing over and over. I'm sorry, when the same thing happens again and again, you keep doing it, expecting a different result. And we need to break out of that mindset ourselves. It's like all my indigenous friends say to me that the first thing that any of us has to do is decolonize our own minds. You know, we have to sort of step out of that mindset and start looking at options. And so far as tangible options, I don't know what they are. It certainly depends on the issue. But back to your original question, I mean, I absolutely support putting those tactics on the table.
We're talking to Derek Jensen. He is author of A Language Older Than Words. You've been invited to prison to speak with those who are jailed for ELF or ALF activities. Is that right? Earth Liberation Front and Animal Liberation Front. Acts of property damage.
Well, that's actually two separate issues. One is I actually teach at a prison. I teach creative writing at a prison, but that's actually not political prisoners. That's just straight prisoners. And then the other
at Pelican
thing,
Bay.
Yeah, Pelican Bay. And then the other thing is that about a month ago, I did a benefit for the Earth Liberation Prisoner Support Network, which was just a gas. It was one of my favorite audiences ever in terms of talking. I mean, it was. This is really that's like who I really want to talk to, or the frontline activists. That's my favorite thing.
Well, we're also joined on the telephone by a longtime environmentalist, Jonathan Stauffer, who is an activist with the Ancient Forest Rescue and a lifetime resident of Vail, Colorado. Again, we're devoting the program today to the issue of the Animal Liberation Front and Earth Liberation Front, as last week the FBI raided the home of and business of Craig Rosebrough in Eugene, Oregon, press spokesperson for the North American Earth Liberation Front. These groups are on the most wanted list of the FBI. He's been served with a subpoena, Rosebrough has, to testify before a federal grand jury on April 18th. The jury's investigating a fire which destroyed over 30 new sports utility vehicles at a car dealership in Eugene, Oregon. We hope to have Craig Rosebrough on this morning, but we have yet to be able to make contact with him. He is under intense surveillance. But David Stauffer, speaking of fires, let's go back to that day in, was it October 1998?
Yes.
And what happened in Vail, Colorado? And I'd like you to respond to some of what Derek Jensen has said.
Well, what happened in Vail, Colorado was Ancient Forest Rescue was engaged, along with several other environmental groups, in fighting a ski expansion into 850 acres of old-growth forest and lynx habitat. And basically, we turned the media attention into onto the issue. We'd had articles around the country, and we'd had enjoyed a great deal of support in the community, which I think I'm qualified to say as I've lived there all my life. And that was October 18th. And on October 19th, someone or several people torched the Two Elk restaurant, a large restaurant at the top of Vail Mountain, Chair 3, Chair 4, and patrol headquarters all at the top of Vail Mountain. And 3 days later, a communique came out from the Earth Liberation Front claiming responsibility for that action.
Had you heard of them before?
No, never.
Now, what were you doing with your group at that time, and how did that affect your activities with the Ancient Forest Rescue?
Well, there were a number of individuals with Ancient Forest Rescue who were intending to block equipment that was scheduled to go up the mountain on October 19th to stop the beginning of the construction project. And as of that morning, obviously, we couldn't risk having somebody up there because the climate of the community had changed overnight into something that was extremely hostile. And I've known some people all my life who looked upon me with a great deal of suspicion because I'd been so vocal in the opposition. But the day of the fires, they looked at me as if I might have had something to do with it. So that would have been a very dangerous situation in which to place activists.
And what ultimately happened in terms of public opinion and Vail Resorts, the developer?
Well, Vail Resorts gained a bona fide victim status. Andy Daly, who's the president of Vail Resorts, was on national television crying. The community's support for what we had been doing up to that point pretty much evaporated. And as I said, there had been a plan to block the roads, and needless to say, that couldn't happen. It did finally happen in July of the next year, but unfortunately, Category 3 is now Blue Sky Basin has been built, and so that acreage has been destroyed. And I would say that the ELF action had very little to do success as far as stopping the project or even heightening awareness and dialogue about what was going on in Vail, but rather turned the outfit that was doing the destruction into a victim, and all the media coverage was about the fires rather than what the issue was, which was Category 3.
Derek Jensen, your mm-hmm. response to the description Jonathan Stauffer had of radical environmental activism, he's saying subverted by the violence of the Earth Liberation Front.
Well, first I want to step away from the term violence, since no humans or that we know of non-humans were injured, and so talk about in terms of property destruction. And the other thing I would say is that, I think I would wonder if we would be having the same conversation right now, if Vail would have been mentioned to your listeners right now, had that action not taken place. And, I can't speak to whether that action was appropriate in that context because I haven't been working on, I wasn't there with him working in that city. And so I don't know whether, I can't speak to the specific action, except what I can say is that I think it has actually raised awareness around the country. I would sort of use by analogy the whole black bloc in Seattle. A lot of activists who are against property destruction say that really damaged the whole air of the WTO demonstrations. But I would actually argue that it brought, even if we talk about it simply in terms of media, that actually brought much more media attention to the issue than there would have been otherwise.
We have to break for stations to identify themselves, but we'll come back and continue this discussion. I should say we did invite the FBI to join us. Our producer, Chris Abrams, spoke with a number of offices around the country, and we weren't successful in getting them on, especially because the ALF, ELF are on the most wanted list. We felt it was important to talk with them about their levels of surveillance, and also attempted to get the Royal Canadian Mounted Police on, as another of our guests, David Barbarash, is under intense surveillance by them, media spokesperson for the Animal Liberation Front in British Columbia. But when we come back, I also want to get response from Alicia Littletree, Earth First organizer, since the Earth Liberation Front did branch off from Earth First. You're listening to Democracy Now! Back in a minute. You are listening to Democracy Now! Free Speech Radio as we talk about the actions of the Earth and Animal Liberation Fronts. Just 2 months ago, a 17-year-old Long Island High School student, the son of a police officer, pleaded guilty to arson in a closed court proceeding. The plea, which the New York FBI office would not confirm, came just weeks after the Earth Liberation Front claimed credit for torching luxury homes in Mount Sinai, New York, and promised, if you build it, we will burn it. Other youths were reported to be in plea negotiations with authorities. The guilty plea marks the first recorded conviction of a self-proclaimed member of the group that since 1996 has claimed responsibility for more than $30 million in ecotage action supposedly taken to protect the environment. The FBI has labeled these U.S. underground eco-warriors inspired by animal liberation and environmental movements in Britain the country's biggest domestic terrorism threat. U.S. authorities blame the group for more than 20 major incidents of arson and sabotage in the last 5 years, with damages estimated at $37 million. The Earth Liberation Front announced its formation in Britain in the early 90s in a breakaway split from the radical movement Earth First by members who wanted to see more direct action. The Earth Liberation Front has been relatively quiet in Britain, but leapt to U.S. public attention 2 years ago when, as we heard David Stauffer describe, a massive fire at the Vail Mountain Ski Resort did $12 million worth of damage, destroying 4 ski lifts and a restaurant. Earth Liberation Front blamed a proposed expansion into Link Habitat. We're joined by, what many in those movements call the philosopher of the movement, Derek Jensen. He has a new book that has been published by Context Books here in New York called A Language Older Than Words. And he's on the line with us from Northern California. We're also joined on the telephone by David Barbarash, who's a media spokesperson for the Animal Liberation Front in British Columbia. He's been under intense surveillance for the last 6 years for many ALF actions. Jonathan Stauffer with us, Ancient Forest Reserve, who is not with Animal or Earth Liberation Fronts, but with a group in Vail, Colorado, that felt that their actions, which involved civil disobedience, were subverted by the actions of the Earth Liberation Front when they came in and burned the parts of the Vail Resort. And Alicia Littletree is with us from Earth First. Alicia Littletree, why did Earth Liberation Front branch away from Earth First, and your take on this movement today?
Yeah, well, I can't really speak for Earth Liberation Front or for the reasons why they branched off of Earth First, if indeed they even did that. The first I ever heard of Earth Liberation Front in the U.S. was from a timber industry wise youth movement, anti-environmental person who had infiltrated Earth First and put out a press release proclaiming there was this eco-terror fringe called Earth Liberation Front. And I also, I just want to say, you kind of take for granted that Earth Liberation Front, or whoever they are, I mean, obviously they're anonymous, that they actually did burn down the Vail Resort. And, you know, with a lot of these actions, we don't know who really did that. We really don't know. You know, it's like the necessary organization for this kind of activity, it's anonymous, and there have been a number of actions attributed to or claimed by the ELF that have, I believe, been very counterproductive in efforts to protect ecological places. Like in Vail, for instance, not only was the community turned against the environmental activists and Vail became a victim, but the federal government moved in and did a closure on the expansion. So, you know, they were able to get the help of the federal government in roaring forward with this ecological destruction. So I just want to say that when, you know, Craig Rosebrough, as the spokesperson for the Earth Liberation Front in Northern California, puts out these communiques claiming credit or claiming responsibility, we don't really know who is doing this or why. And one of the very interesting things that David Barbarash said at the beginning of the show was that undercover agents in the RCMP in Canada were trying to get him to, they were trying to get him to burn down a building. And we have to ask ourselves why and what goal would be served by the RCMP actually trying to provoke arson. And in Earth First, we have a long history of being falsely associated with property destruction and with violence. We've been branded eco-terrorists for our very confrontational, nonviolent direct action, and we've also been attacked and blamed for the violence done against us. So this has been a real uphill struggle for a long time, and I am not part of the ELF, and I can't explain why they do the things they do, but I do think that we need discourse. I agree with the other guests about that, and I think that one of the things we have to really talk about is how to become more sophisticated in in the tactics that we use, so that these tactics can't be used to destroy legitimate movements.
David Barbarash, media spokesperson for the Animal Liberation Front in British Columbia, your response to Alicia Littletree of Earth First.
I'm quite well. Maybe I'm not surprised at her response, but I don't think it serves anyone to paint our movement as something that it's not. I've been involved with Earth First since the early 80s, and I have been involved with property destruction on behalf of Earth First in the 80s. So for Alicia Littletree to say that property destruction and Earth First are not synonymous is just not correct. It's a part of our history, and Earth First movement was founded on the basis and the belief that the destruction of property is a valid concept, and it's a valid a motive of protest. So I just want to get that out of the way right away. I also want to respond to the Ancient Forest Rescue spokesperson. I think that one of the major failings of the whole Vail campaign post-ELF arson is the fact that a number of Ancient Forest Rescue activists and environmentalists in that area sided with the corporation, sided with eco-destroyers, sided with the FBI by speaking to grand juries and testifying to the government about activists, about the movement, and did not take the opportunity that the Earth Liberation Front afforded them and speak up loudly, proudly, and clearly to the media and to the world, yes, Vail is wrong, yes, Vail shouldn't be here. Yes, Vail needs to be burnt down. Yes, this is lynx habitat. I think it's a travesty that that environmentalists and especially Earth Firsters are putting such negative dispersions on people who are nonviolent, who are motivated by great feelings of love and compassion for the wilderness and for animal and all life, and who are taking personal responsibility and putting their lives and their bodies on the line to save this planet. I think it's the real sadness of this whole movement is that the mainstream environmentalists and the Earth Firsters and the people who engage in civil disobedience and other tactics such as that do not come on board and say, yes, we understand the motivations of the Earth Liberation Front and the Animal Liberation Front. Yes, we agree with those motivations. Yes, we are on the same side here. And yes, we will support each other and stand together and fight these corporations that are destroying our planet.
Derek Jensen, author of A Language Older Than Words, the FBI special agent David Zaidi said, "We think that at this particular time in history, the Earth Liberation Front and the Animal Liberation Front are the most active terrorism group we have and are escalating their criminal activity across the board." He said, "So far, no one has been injured or killed in attacks that have ranged from timber operations to animals and genetically modified food research. But given Britain's experience," he said, "eventually someone's going to be injured." Your response to that?
Well, my first response is that clearly the largest and most active terrorist organization in this country is the U.S. military. I mean, so if we're going to talk about terrorism, let's talk about 18,000 Iraqis dead, from the sanctions, blah, blah, blah. We can go that way. So the first thing is, I want to step also back for a second and talk about something that David said, and that I think has to do with this whole issue, which is the horrible racist Nathan Bedford Forrest won a lot of battles in the Civil War, and somebody asked him once how you win, and he said you get there first with the most. And I think that that's absolutely true in terms of discourse, and that's the reason I'm sort of jumping all over this issue, is that so long as we allow those in power to define the terms of the debate, they're going to win. And if they can define burning down a building in Vail as terrorism and not define building that building in the first place as terrorism, or I don't want to go terrorism with that because I want to use a really specific definition of it, but as long as they can define that as acceptable behavior and burning it down as unacceptable behavior, then once again we've lost even before we begin the debate. So that's what I would do. I would strongly object to the use of the word terrorism to describe the ALF or the ELF. If they want to talk about them as a rising sabotage movement, sure, we can have a discussion.
Let me bring David Stauffer back into the conversation from the Ancient Forest Reserve in Colorado. You've described a situation with the fires that took place at a time when you were engaging in radical direct action as well, but condemned the fires. You said it almost made you think that you were wondering if Vail Resort was behind it, since it so swayed public opinion the other way once that happened, when you had public opinion on your side fighting the development for quite a period.
That's an argument that had been bandied about around by other people, but it was very effective in turning the tide in Vail Resort's favor. I think I'd like to respond to what David said. I mean, it's all well and good to say, you know, we should support the ELF and the ALF, but I mean the and Derek said, you know, well, the building of that building was terrorism, and maybe it was, but it's been there for 10 years. It had nothing to do with the expansion, nothing at all. And, on the other hand, I've, you know, lived in Vail all my life. I know these people. They're my neighbors in some cases, including Andy Daly, who lives up the road from my parents. And
the head of Vail Resorts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's all well and good to say we should support this when actually the biggest victims of the whole action were the environmentalists who were on the ground. And as far as what Derek said about getting publicity for what was going on there, every mention of the arson had nearly zero mention of the fact that the old-growth forest and the lynx habitat was going to be destroyed for a skier. It was all about the arson. And you say, you know, the property destruction in Seattle was useful. I was in Seattle. You know, and the police used as an excuse to unleash the tear gas and start shooting rubber bullets at old ladies coming out of their buildings. I think it, and then all of a sudden, I mean, all it did was provide fodder for a sensationalistic mainstream media.
Well, I have to say, the rubber bullets were certainly shot and the tear gas shut off well before any glass was broken.
I mean, not as far as I saw. You know, I mean, sure, the police there were amped up. But I didn't see. I thought that they used it as an excuse. I really did, and because the mainstream media couldn't define exactly, you know, who it was who was demonstrating. I mean, it was difficult for them because there was an environmentalist there, and there were trade unions, and church groups there, and everybody thinks that WTO is a bad idea. But because they couldn't just, you know, package us instantly, all of a sudden it was a riot.
Well, I'm going to give
easier to define that way.
Derek Jensen, The Last Word, author of A Language Older Than Words. We just have a minute.
Well, I think it's really important, once again, not to let... I mean, I think the police are going to do what they're going to do, and we can't allow... The stakes are too high to allow them to determine our actions.
How many Earth and Animal Liberation Front people have been imprisoned?
Ask David that.
David, Barbara Ash in British Columbia?
Perhaps a handful.
Sorry?
A handful.
not very many.
And these are the only ones that will identify themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Derek Jensen.
I'm sorry, what's your question?
I interrupted you.
Oh, just that I think it's really important that we not allow the police response to determine our actions, that we need to do what we think is right and move forward with it.
Well, on that note, we will continue this discussion. I would very much like to hear from our listeners. You can email us at mail@democracynow.org. That's mail@democracynow.org. Or you can call us on our hotline at 212-209-2999. That's 212-209-2999. I want to thank Derek Jensen, author of A Language Older Than Words. It's a new book published by Context Books in New York. David Barbarash, media spokesperson for the Animal Liberation Front in British Columbia. Alicia Littletree, Earth First organizer from Northern California. And Jonathan Stauffer, activist with the Ancient Forest Rescue, longtime resident of Vail, Colorado. That does it for the program. If you'd like to order a cassette copy, call 1-800-735-0230. I look forward to seeing listeners in New York this weekend at the Socialist Scholars Conference. There'll be hundreds of workshops at Cooper Union. I'll be at the Hewitt Auditorium, Hewitt Building, 7 East 7th Street in Lower Manhattan on Saturday starting at 1:30 with many others talking about independent media, Ed Herman, David Barsamian, Bernard White, and others. Thanks so much for listening today. Our producers are Chris Abrams and Terry Allen, Anthony Sloan, our engineer. Special thanks to Robert Knight from the Embattled Studios of WBAI, from the studios of The Band and the Fired, from the studios of you, our listeners. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening. To Robert Knight from the Embattled Studios of WBAI, from the studios of The Band and the Fired, from the studios of you, our listeners. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.